Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
From Iowa Public Radio News, this is the legislative show Under the Golden Dome. I'm John Pimble. It's funnel week. That means most bills that haven't passed a committee by now are no longer in play. This does not apply to bills that deal with appropriations, ways and means, government oversight, administrative rules, and a few other issues. That's why the budget, for example, is often one of the last things done in a session. Today, we focus on a bill that didn't make it through the funnel, and one that did. They are both polarizing. One bill now eligible for Senate chamber debate is about abortion restriction. First, some background about abortion laws from earlier in this General Assembly. A bill approved last session makes abortion illegal after 20 weeks. It also states a woman has to wait 72 hours to have an abortion. This provision is challenged by Planned Parenthood and is presently being decided by the Iowa Supreme Court. There have been other abortion bills proposed, including one stating life begins at conception, also known as a personhood bill. It would make abortion illegal in virtually any scenario. Such a law is certain to face court challenges, something proponents like Senator Rick Bertrand acknowledges during a March 2017 debate.
It's the goal of sending it back to where this horrific practice began, which was the Supreme Court.
Such a court challenge would maintain or overturn Roe v. Wade, a 1973 Supreme Court decision that established abortion rights in the United States. The goal of some legislators is to advance a bill from Iowa to the level of the U.S. Supreme Court, where, depending on which way the justices are leaning, could lead to a complete ban on abortions. A topic like this generates great interest, and it's common for a subcommittee to hear testimony from a variety of Iowans who may not otherwise speak at the Capitol. Senate Study Bill 3143 is such a bill. Senator Amy Sinclair is the chair of a three-member Judiciary Subcommittee.
So I appreciate everyone being cordial today and discussing this topic. I'm here to hear from you and hear your thoughts.
Sinclair describes the bill.
This bill prohibits abortions where a fetal heartbeat can be found by a physician using an abdominal ultrasound. The physician shall inform the pregnant woman of the heartbeat in writing and inform her that an abortion cannot be performed.
The bill states the woman must sign a form acknowledging she has received this information. The heartbeat of a fetus can be detected as early as 6 weeks.
A physician who knowingly and intentionally performs an abortion in violation of this law commits a Class D felony with a maximum sentence of up to 5 years in prison.
Senator Jason Schultz is one of the subcommittee panelists. He strongly opposes abortion and says stopping a beating heart is not health care.
As the culture moves toward a life position, affirming the fact that killing is never health care, that we find ourselves in a situation where even those who are seeking to end the Holocaust of death that we find ourselves in, and it's a culture of death that permeates all the way through. It's even moving to the point where so-called death with dignity laws are actually just ending life prematurely at the end. We find ourselves in a culture where, because of abortion, because of the a la carte death that the industry has brought us, that the culture is being repulsed by that and finding that life does matter. So while I've spent all of my time on conception, fertilization, at what I find to be my personal end goal, this is the first time I've been on something less than that, and I think that this is an interesting point at which this may be what our culture is ready for at this moment.
The third member of the subcommittee, Senator Janet Peterson, does not support this bill. She says it jeopardizes maternal health care.
And especially women in rural Iowa. This bill is dangerous, and this bill is unconstitutional. This bill doesn't just go after women. It goes after doctors. It goes after girls. It goes after moms, it goes after grandmas, and it goes after Iowa families. This bill will impact every Iowan who gets their period and every woman who doesn't get their period. It is a direct attack on women's health care across our state. If this bill were to become law, our state would lose its only residency program for OBGYNs. What does that mean for Iowa women? It means fewer providers providing OBGYN care across our state.
Reverend David Sikulka, pastor for Urbandale United Church of Christ, says the presence of a heartbeat does not necessarily mean there is life.
And I grew up on a farm here in Iowa, and, you know, there were the science projects where somebody brought in a calf heart or a pig heart and a battery and some electrodes, and by golly, they could make that heartbeat. This is very simplistic thinking, frankly. The gift of life is a wonder, it is a mystery, and the heart is an excellent indicator of all that is good about life. It pulses and surges when there's excitement, it aches when there's pain, but just a beating heart is not life.
Lisa Bennett is an OBGYN physician. She says when an abdominal ultrasound is used, there are many factors that need to be considered when detecting the heartbeat of a fetus.
The earliest that you can reliably detect a fetal heartbeat with an abdominal ultrasound based on LMP dating, which is the common medical standard for gestational dating, is about 8 weeks, but that's under optimal circumstances. And what does that mean, optimal circumstances? When the ultrasound probe is placed on the woman's belly, it has to go through the abdominal wall to reach the uterus, and go through the uterus to reach where the fetal heartbeat is. If a woman is obese, there's much more tissue to have to go through. They're not going to be able to detect the heartbeat as early in someone who's obese. If the uterus itself has structural issues such as fibroids, which create the wall to be much thicker, they're not going to see the heartbeat as early. If the uterus is retroverted, which means it's tipped to the back away from the ultrasound rather than forward, it's going to be more difficult to see that heartbeat. So not every woman is the same. Not every woman has the same anatomy. And so not every woman is going to have the same gestational age at which the heartbeat can be detected. Therefore, this is not going to be applied equally to all women.
Dr. Bennett also says some women do not know they are pregnant until 8 or 12 weeks, especially if they aren't planning to have a child.
Hi, my name is Leah Vandenbosch. Sorry, I'm incredibly nervous right now.
Leah Vandenbosch says she is testifying for Planned Parenthood to share her own story about abortion rights. She grew up in Orange City. During high school, she participated with a chapel group that would protest Planned Parenthood.
I didn't know anything more until I needed Planned Parenthood. For 10 years, I've struggled with an eating disorder. I lost my period for years because I was so malnourished. But I struggle with depression, anxiety, and when I found out I was pregnant, it was the worst thing that has ever happened to me. And I was alone, and I was scared, and I did not have any doubts with what I was going to do because I knew that I had to put myself first and I had to put my mental health first. This is very raw and fresh for me. I actually just had to tell my parents 2 nights ago because I knew that I would be speaking today, and they deserve to know first. And now I'm dealing with so much shame and disgrace, and it's incredibly hurtful. But what my parents don't realize is that if you passed this bill, and this was in effect when I got pregnant, I would not be sitting here today because I know I would have taken my own life. So if you are so concerned with life, think about the life of these women. I don't even have a story of rape or incest. There are stories that are so much more horrific to listen to than mine. But this is my story. I would not be here if I didn't have this choice. This isn't just about murder or the Bible or your religious convictions. This is about life of the women in Iowa, and one-third of women have experienced this. How many stories have you not heard? And it's because we're not speaking, because we're so ashamed. And you're not helping. And I don't want to be sharing my story. I mean, I'm so proud to be sitting here today and taking the time to do this, but it is so painful for me. But I feel like I have to stick up and represent these women. I'm praying to the same God that you are right now this morning, and he's pushing me here to speak to you and show you a different side. So please just consider my perspective. Think of your daughters, think of your granddaughters, and stop thinking of your grandbabies that aren't even born. What would you do if your daughter or your granddaughter was in my life? Would you protect these cells, whatever you think of, this fetus, would you protect that, or would you protect your daughter?
Here to voice support for the bill is the Vice President and Chief Counsel for the Family Leader, Chuck Hurley.
Is there anybody in this room who, honest to God, wishes that they'd been aborted?
Hurley says his question is not rhetorical.
That's what we're talking about. That's what we're talking about, is treating others the way we would want to be treated. That's the bottom line in every rule you make, in every law you pass. We're to treat others the way we would want to be treated. And those are difficult decisions. But because we know that's a baby in the womb, you're advancing legislation to protect those babies. Because none of us held up our hands. It's true. That's the greatest rule of all. On the law, we've heard from a couple people saying this is unconstitutional. I want to emphasize to you folks, you know this, but it bears repeating. The first two sections of our Iowa Constitution tell you that you are here for a purpose, and that is to protect the citizens. You have a duty that you can't abdicate to the courts. You have a duty to protect people. When you pass a law that protects people, then the courts have it in their hands. And if they decide to overturn what you have passed, the blood is on their hands.
Hurley says if this bill is challenged and goes to the U.S. Supreme Court, it's hard to predict the outcome, and Iowa lawmakers have a special opportunity to pass this law now. For the closing remarks, Subcommittee Chair Amy Sinclair affirms her support for the bill.
There are two heartbeats that have affected my life pretty significantly. At 19 years old, I found myself pregnant, and I remember it at my very first visit with my obstetrician, my gynecologist, hearing that child's heartbeat and knowing that he was alive. He was not a blob of tissues. He was a child in my body, but a separate human being on his own. And that heartbeat affected me. The other heartbeat that has affected me profoundly is the one that stopped. The heartbeat of my dad. He was pronounced dead when his heartbeat stopped. We are passing a bill that identifies what we all intrinsically know to be true, that these are human beings with the same rights, the same... We have the responsibility to offer them the same liberty and the same care that you and I have. I will be advancing this bill to the full Judiciary Committee.
On Monday, the full Judiciary Committee meets to discuss this bill.
I'll call the meeting to order.
The room is filled with around 150 people. Most are visitors that are pro or anti-abortion rights activists. Judiciary Chair Senator Brad Zond acknowledges the sensitive nature of the bill.
I will tell everyone here that I know that there is emotions high on both sides. I will not tolerate interruptions. I will not tolerate disrespect on both sides. And if you do, I will ask the State Patrol to have you removed.
Unlike the subcommittee, this full committee is not seeking input from anyone other than the senators. Only two speak. First, Senator Sinclair uses the opening remarks and only reads from the bill. This bill does allow for an abortion in the event of a medical emergency, but a physician has to later explain the nature of the emergency before the Board of Medicine.
A charged physician may seek a hearing before the Board of Medicine regarding the determination of a medical emergency. The findings of the board are admissible in court. Record keeping is required for the physicians regarding fetal heartbeat tests. The pregnant woman is not criminally liable under the bill. The Board of Medicine is to adopt rules to comply with the bill.
The bill is very specific about having the doctor and the patient sign forms for any clinical visit that involves first detecting the heartbeat of a fetus. Senator Janet Peterson represents the opposing viewpoint in the Senate. She reads the same statement she gave during the subcommittee a week prior.
This bill redefines medical emergency for women and only women. It takes away a woman's ability to get health care that is in her best medical interest. there are no other provisions in Iowa code that say an Iowan cannot access medical care unless it is to prevent death, not even for Iowans in prison. I cannot imagine telling a doctor what she or he can or cannot do in a patient's care. This bill would put a doctor at risk of going to prison for doing what she believes is in the best interest of her patient. It will be another reason why doctors choose not to practice medicine in our state, which is already dangerously low on OBGYNs.
Senator Sinclair makes a brief closing remark.
In the audience, I would like to thank whoever it was who offered their seat to a young pregnant lady. That happens to be my daughter-in-law, who is currently coexisting with the beating heart of my life grandson. I have a constituent in my district. He was a dispatcher for the Wayne County Sheriff's Department, and he's an amazing man. He had a heart attack, and his heart stopped beating, and he was dead, he tells me. He was dead for 8 minutes until his heart was restarted by an AED. And when his heart was restarted, he was alive. I won't belabor this tonight because I don't think we need to. In this room with me tonight is an 18-year-old man whose beating heart I could have chosen to stop. I think it's a horrific reflection and a barbaric practice that could have been my choice and that young man would not be here today to be a contributing member of our society. Mr. Chairman, with honor and pleasure, I would move this bill.
The bill passes 8-5, with all Republicans supporting and all Democrats opposing. As the committee is adjourned, there are cheers from visitors who are happy about the vote. The bill is now eligible for debate in the full Senate chamber. Governor Reynolds has indicated strong support for any bill restricting abortion. This is Under the Golden Dome, an Iowa Public Radio show about the legislative session. I'm John Pemble.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
The state abolished the death penalty in 1965. Occasionally, there is a movement to reinstate it. The last time a bill reached a legislative chamber for debate was in 1995. Last year, there was an attempt to bring it back, but it's not until this week that a capital punishment bill had enough traction to potentially come before a chamber. The House had a bill, but the majority party didn't have enough votes for it to move forward. The Senate has a different bill. Senator Julian Garrett, chair of this Senate Judiciary Subcommittee, explains what crimes could carry the sentence of death.
The crimes that this bill covers would be murder in the first degree of a peace officer acting in the performance of that peace officer's duties, or murder in the first degree plus kidnapping and sexual abuse.
Jeff Danker is the Pottawatomie County Sheriff. He is one of many to testify in the subcommittee's packed room. This bill would not be enforceable for crimes committed prior to its enactment date, but Sheriff Danker cites a case it would apply to if this bill was the law earlier this year.
We had one of the probably worst things that can happen to a law enforcement agency. We had a deputy get shot and killed, and we had one get shot and seriously injured.
This happened as a man was being placed in a police van. He attacked two officers with a shank, then managed to get to the front seat of the van, get a gun, and shoot an officer in the head. Sheriff Danker says there is video of the incident, and he has no doubt about this person's guilt, a suspect who has already been sentenced for another murder.
Now he is going to be incarcerated for probably the rest of his life, and I just hate to see him injure or kill somebody else. in, you know, whether it's one of our correctional officers in the detention facility or another prisoner in jail, because it's like I said, he has no remorse, and he, you know, individual like this, that's the way he thinks, and he will if the opportunity comes up, he will kill again.
Wendy Abrahamson from the Episcopal Church in the Diocese of Iowa testifies that her church is against the death penalty. She brings up the crucifixion of Jesus Christ.
We're coming up to what, for my faith tradition anyway, is one of the most sacred times in the church, and that's the season of Lent, coming up to Good Friday, when the person that I hope to follow anyway was publicly executed. And just based on that, and our human fallibility, we don't feel that we have any business going near something like that. Public execution, certainly private execution, execution of someone by the state, we are mistaken. We make errors, and the idea of execution in and of itself is something that seems to be such an affront to God's intent for humanity that it seems a really dangerous thing for humans to practice.
Also citing religious faith is Pastor Brad Cranston from Heritage Baptist Church in Burlington.
As a pastor looking at the scriptures, you go back to Genesis, where a lot of the foundational beliefs are laid in scripture, and you have Noah coming off the ark and God resetting really the how creation was going to be ordered and getting it started again. And of all the things that God could have said to Noah, and he did say a few others, but the one thing he said in Genesis 9:6, which many regard this as the beginning of the establishment of government in the scriptures, and God said this in Genesis 9:6, "Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man." And really, this is the ultimate establishment of the fact of how sacred life is. Life is so sacred, God says, that if you take someone else's, then your own is required.
Mark Doss, an evangelical Free Church pastor, also agrees with Pastor Cranston's remarks.
If we are so valuing life that we, as the government, the state of Iowa, are willing to say we will not allow a person to take another person's life, so rare and a heinous crime, I think it is of value to have that option to impose the death penalty.
Another pastor follows and makes a religious case for the death penalty. Dave Tyree from the Church of Christ in Sheraton says taking a human life should be a hard thing to do by the state.
If you truly love life and believe that it's a gift from God, then there's got to be some kind of an appropriate punishment for someone who wantonly goes out and takes human life. Romans 13 plainly states that it's the state's duty to get justice, not the church's job, but it is the job of the state. In fact, the word sword is used. It doesn't say timeout room. It doesn't say a cell for the rest of their life with three square meals and health care. It says a sword.
Patty Brown is an activist for Iowans Against the Death Penalty. She also opposes abortion and says she doesn't understand how someone can support an anti-abortion bill and be pro-death penalty.
I applaud those of you who stand for the heartbeat bill, but I would point out the hypocrisy of also asking for a bill to take away a heartbeat. I wonder how many of you here today on this panel and in this room have ever sat on a murder trial. I have been a juror on an Iowa murder trial before, and I voted with confidence on the circumstantial evidence that was presented to us to convict the defendant, because I knew that person would be put in prison, life in prison, without parole in this state. Some 2% of the people who have been on death row in our country since the 1970s have been either exonerated or have had their life sentences overturned because of some type of prosecutorial error or some type of judicial problem. Only 2% of those people. Many have had advocacy to help them. Many have not. There are 3,000 people on death row in this country. We don't really know how many of those folks might also be innocent but are awaiting death.
Jane Robinette from Urbandale opposes the death penalty. She cites Representative Stephen Holt, who 2 weeks ago unexpectedly announced he couldn't support a death penalty bill in the House, despite his moral belief that capital punishment is right.
Practically speaking, Representative Holt put it best. He did his research. He found that the death penalty is not a deterrent, and that executions cost more than life without parole. All of the death penalty bills introduced this session are about the same length, several pages long, whether they are addressing one crime or all first-degree murder. And the reason for that is Iowa hasn't had the death penalty since 1965, so we have to create a whole infrastructure. We'll have to train lawyers and judges on the unique features of death penalty cases. We'll need to find suitable lethal medications. We'll need to create prison death row and execution facilities with the required viewing space. You can't just ramp that whole system up once a case arises.
This subcommittee has five panelists. One, Senator Tony Bisignano, was in the Senate in 1995, the last time a death penalty debate happened in Iowa. He says he opposes the death penalty, but back then he wanted Iowa legislators to have the discussion, so he floor managed the bill.
I brought the bill to the floor, and we had a great discussion. We started out with 17 yes votes, which wasn't enough to pass it. But I wanted everybody in the chamber to have an opportunity to debate it. And through that debate, as we talked about, first of all, the consequences of a death penalty and those who have been proven innocent after they were executed. We also talked about the socioeconomics of those that were executed. And we know where that falls. Poor people are executed, rich people aren't. And so I got to give credit, to summate that debate. At the end of the debate, the governor had sent his lobbyists to the floor of the Senate and asked Republicans not to vote for the bill. And in the end, there were 11 yeses. And that bill has not been debated since. Because we had a good debate. We had a fair debate. We laid out, what is the death penalty? What does it cost? How does it proceed? Who gets executed? That will be parts of my floor speech if this happens to get to the floor of the Senate. There's a dichotomy of someone who's executed. I want to give credit to Governor Reynolds, who in her State of the State set her priorities. She talked about harassment, sexual harassment, and respect for women in the workplace. She talked about clean water. She talked about tax cuts. She did not talk about the death penalty. She did not call for the death penalty. She has not spoken about the death penalty. The Iowa House, in its wisdom, and some of its most conservative members determined, it is not a deterrent. It is not worth the state's treasury. Life is life, and anybody that thinks in a maximum security prison in Fort Madison is a luxury cell, a comfortable cell, you need to visit the penitentiary, because I cannot think of more hell on earth at the age of 18 or 25 or 30 to spend the next 50, 60, 65 years confined into an 8x10 cell.
Senator Jason Schultz supports this bill. He singles out Patty Brown's testimony. She is the one who supports an anti-abortion bill, but not the death penalty.
That is the position, not that I hold, but the one that I can respect, that you are, you support the heartbeat bill. You oppose the death penalty. I can respect that. One of the things that I have to admit, I've been sitting here absolutely perplexed. I have sat on some pretty big subcommittees in the last week to include that heartbeat bill, the permitless carry, also was on Thursday. And I've seen the same individuals come and representing their denominations or their associations who will not stand up for the baby in the womb, who is innocent and has done nothing, but want to protect the life of the person who will molest, rape, murder that baby, that little girl, and then shoot the officer who comes to enforce the law and protect that baby. I can't wrap my mind around that, to be quite honest. And I'm stunned how those two positions could be. So thank you for coming, ma'am. I'm not exactly where you are, but I fully respect that. I am where you are, sir, and Pastor Brad Cranston. I look forward to the day when unborn babies are defended with the same volume and strenuous defense as a baby rapist. I don't get that, or cop killer in this case. And I guess I would, right now, I didn't run for office to try to reinstate the death penalty, but I certainly would trade right now. I mean, that's our, if those folks who would defend the right to have an abortion would change their position, I would change my position on the death penalty. I don't understand. I would certainly give, fine, we'll keep the baby rapist in prison, but could we let the baby be born?
Senator Rich Taylor says he is very torn about how to vote on this bill because he's worked at the Fort Madison Penitentiary for 27 years. Some of the inmates there are serving life sentences for murder.
And with working there, you have to assume that everyone's there for a reason. You have to assume that they're guilty because 12 people said they were. But that's not always true, as we found out with the coming of the DNA tests. We've let several people out of our prison systems that were proved they couldn't possibly have done the crime. They weren't there. I've heard the people speak, mostly the people that were against this bill, speak about the costs. That shouldn't even be part of the discussion. Whether we do this or not should have nothing to do with the cost. It should all be right or wrong. I've heard people speak for it using the Bible and against it using the Bible and using God as writing these words. Well, everybody knows God did not write these words. Some man wrote the words down. Now, maybe he got the inspiration from God, but God himself didn't write anything down. I won't say that I can't see that there is no benefit to it. I can't say there's no benefit to it. But I can say that if we're going to move this bill, there has to be a lot more protections for the guy that we're or girl that we're going to kill with this bill. There's got to be a lot more protections in my mind.
Subcommittee Chair Julian Garrett says he supports this bill, even though he understands in the past some innocent people have been placed on death row.
I would suggest that now, with DNA evidence and so on, it's probably much, much less likely that that would happen than it would have in the past. And so I think we're in a better position now in that area than we have been over the years. And one last comment, and I'm kind of following up what Senator Schultz said, but it's hard for me to equate. I know a lot of opponents of the death penalty will say, well, you guys are being inconsistent because you support death penalty for a criminal, but you oppose abortion, you oppose abortion. And I've never been able to understand that argument, equating the killing of an innocent unborn baby, putting that in the same category as killing someone who's committed a heinous murder. I just don't get the comparison there. That just isn't an argument in my mind. So again, thank you very much. I'm going to sign the sheet and we'll move the bill on. We'll see where it goes from here.
On a 3-2 vote, Republicans support, Democrats oppose. The death penalty is moved to a full committee. This was on Monday. On Tuesday, something unexpected happens.
I'm going to leave it up to our Senator Dix in regards to moving it forward, but it'll have to be done through an amendment. I'm not saying that the issue will not be discussed anymore, but I'm saying as Judiciary Chair, the issue is not going to be debated.
The Chair of the Judiciary Committee, Senator Brad Zahn, announces he will not schedule this bill for a vote in the full committee. This means it cannot easily advance to the Senate for debate. Senator Zahn says he would have been a yes vote if he allowed it to come before his committee.
I'm not a death penalty advocate, but in this very narrowly written bill with raping a child and shooting a peace officer or killing a peace officer, I would support that. I have got a lot on my plate as the Judiciary Chair, and I have higher priorities to do, and I decided today that I'm not going to move forward with the death penalty bill in full judiciary. I do leave that open to another colleague of mine if they want to run an amendment, assuming that it's appropriate on the appropriate bill and it's germane to the issue, they could do that. But as Judiciary Chair, I am putting the brakes on that bill.
Senator Zahn mentions this bill can come up as an amendment to another bill later during the session. While it can be done, it would be a challenge for a senator to attach a bill with this much controversy and weight to another. For now, a death penalty bill during this General Assembly is very unlikely. This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the legislative session. Compared to last year at this time, there is very little activity in either chamber. For example, on Valentine's Day 2017, both the House and Senate were debating collective bargaining restrictions. Next week, it's likely there will be debate. Perhaps we will see something make it to the governor's desk to be signed into law. If so, you'll hear about it on this show. I get lots of help in making this show. Thanks to our State House reporter Joyce Russell and IPR reporter Katarina Sestarik. Talk show producers are of great help too, Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. Radio Iowa's Kay Henderson also contributes to the show as well. Thank you, Kay. Iowa Public Radio's news program director is Catherine Perkins, who gave this episode edit support. Michael Leland is Iowa Public Radio's news director. I'm John Pemble. Next Friday, another week of highlights will be delivered to your favorite podcast subscription program, the website iowapublicradio.org, and the IPR app. Listen and share with your friends. Under the Golden Dome is a production of Iowa Public Radio.